It really doesn't matter what our faith or spiritual tradition is. We're all called to be present in goodness and love and compassion. And I would say that when we learn to do that, we become our best selves. We become a blessing from simply being present in the world and helping those around. And that's the spirituality of the borderlands.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Today on In Good Faith, we have a guest who's contributing to an ongoing national conversation, one we've been having for over 40 years. And she brings to that discussion a perspective and experience I've never heard before. Reverend Dr. Helen Bercier served as a volunteer chaplain inside an immigrant family detention center in 2015 and 2016 in Texas, a detention center for mothers and their children who had come to the U.S. seeking asylum as part of a legal migration process for refugees, as defined by the United Nations, and a process that has been part of U.S. immigration law since 1980. Pastora Helena, as she was known, facilitated ART as a pastoral care ministry of presence with more than 5,000 women and children in that detention center. Today, she continues to volunteer with and advocate for refugees seeking asylum.
Early on, I was a volunteer chaplain during the time that I was a full-time minister. I was serving at a church in Texas, and I'd have people say, "Oh, are you bringing up Jesus?" No. In fact, my faith, quite frankly, pales in comparison to the absolute profound faith that the families have as they are making this horrific, dangerous overland journey and putting their lives in the hands of the God that they believe absolutely has called them forth to seek safety, to seek asylum in the United States, and who will protect them beyond a shadow of a doubt. They cite scripture verses. They're coming out of the, I guess it would almost be like an evangelical Catholic church planting in the day, and they absolutely believe that God is with them every step of the way.
So you really had a connection there, I think, through faith from the very moment you set foot in the door.
From the moment I set foot in the door, and I always had my Community Fellowship Presbyterian Church logo shirt on, and once I was released from Carnes, I always wore my liturgical collar in the different places that I went on both sides of the border, because it was an immediate trust in me as a pastor that they could sit with me and pray with me, and I could hold them while they're weeping, and so it was just a visual strong, whereas when I was inside Carnes, they knew I was Pastora Elena, and I didn't need the same kind of visible liturgical look. They just knew who I was, and they could absolutely trust me.
So you already are working in a congregation within the Presbyterian Church. What drew you, and how were you able to become a volunteer chaplain in the first place?
I had been a church planter pastor, and my whole world and life had been going on building a church from scratch. And once the church became more stable, the connectional nature of the Presbyterian Church asked me to chair the Mission Outreach and Justice Committee, of which an important piece of it was working with the displaced families. This was at the same time that a large number of unaccompanied migrants were crossing the border, and then followed soon after by mothers and small children. And so I started visiting the mothers and children inside the for-profit GEO Carnes in Carnes City, which is about 70 miles away from where I lived at the time and where I worked. And then in March of 2015, our children were having their spring break, and we always did outreach things with other children in the community, and we did it through art. So I thought, well, hey, I wonder if I could bring art into the children who were locked up there with their moms. And so I reached out to the director who I knew at the time, and I would go two or three times a month, and I would go in the morning and do jewelry making with the mothers, and then in the afternoon, I would do art with the children. And when the children were not in school, and so the school was brought into the detention center, but when they weren't in school during their own, quote, spring break, not really a break because they're still locked up, and then in June, they would have a break, and then in July, they would have 2 weeks off of school. So in those times, I would go in, and parallel would be Vacation Bible School intensified with 300 children in a gymnasium, just bring in all the supplies and have projects for them to do. And it was a level of joy that's beyond conception, because they were allowed to be children in that time.
And so much of what we typically think about as the life of a child had been taken from them by the circumstances.
Absolutely. The very first art reflection that I had the children do, I asked them to share their memories of their families more as a celebration of love and kind of a virtual letter across the miles. And one boy, he was like 7 or 8 maybe, I remember the violence of my father beating my mother. We almost missed life, meaning they would have died if they'd stayed in their country. So from the very, very beginning, I didn't realize how much information I was collecting of the families, of the horrors that they had experienced.
I want to delve in just a moment more into the spirituality and faith of the people you're working with. Your subtitle is A Spirituality of Borders.
Yes. So I did them in the art ministry for 2 years and then I was kicked out. And then at that point, I had the time to translate some of the testimonies that the families had written. And through that, taking all of these art reflections that the families had done, and in that I started looking for the connections between the stories and their experiences. And from the very beginning, I realized that I needed to become a portal for their witness. So A Precious Precarity is my 6th book, but this is the one that was closest to my heart because I realized immediately in my time with the families that they are struggling for life, that they trust in God, that they appreciate how precious life is. And I realized that in comparison to the church I pastored at the time, that they had far more faith, far more conviction and trust that God was with them. Even though I walked through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. They believed it, they owned it, they lived it. And that's a very important part of the spirituality in the borders. The best of the best are coming to this country. They're presented as being the worst of the worst, when in fact, they are the ones who have strong faith, who would imbue this nation with goodness and kindness and compassion and love, because that's who they are. They're taking their children with them because they do not want them to be forced into the gangs. They do not want them to be used by the gang masters. And so we're getting the good ones, if you will. They are people of love. They want their children to have life. And you often hear the phrase better life. Well, they're not looking for better life in the sense that we think. They're looking for bare life, for life that their children can walk to school without being risked of all of the violence, that their children have a hope and a future. And so they're willing to risk all so that their children can have life. And how is that any different than anyone in the United States of America?
Yeah. I mean, how could you set out on a journey without having a certain level of faith because of all of the unknowns?
Absolutely. And can you imagine walking from the tip of Texas with a small child all the way to Canada? I mean, that's the equivalent. Who would do that in America? There has to be a reason that they're coming. And the reason is quite simply that they can't stay. And their hearts want a bare life for their children so that they do have a hope and a future. And they are displaced people because they certainly haven't been welcomed in the United States. And they can't stay at home.
You organize this book according to the book of Ecclesiastes. And I thought it was really interesting how you start every chapter with a quote from the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 1 from the beginning, meaningless, meaningless, says the teacher, utterly meaningless, everything is. And King James, vanity, all is vanity. And yet, in that spirituality, you're not seeing that as cynicism necessarily.
Is it
just that acknowledgement of the endless repetition of the human situation?
This is what life has dealt me. This is my one life. What can I do? And how can I make meaning within the meaninglessness of it? I took a course on Ecclesiastes, an exegetically intensive course, which means long-winded research on very few words of scripture that you painfully then write long papers on. And I did it on Ecclesiastes. And from the beginning, I heard Ecclesiastes in their witness, in their lives, in their testimonies, because Ecclesiastes is about living life despite. It's about trusting God despite. It's the wisdom that says, okay, everything is right and it works and it should be this way, except when it doesn't. And Ecclesiastes writes about the exceptions. So yes, in a perfect world, the families would love to stay in their homelands, but their situation is not ideal. And so they are objecting to and saying, no, for me to find life, I will have to leave my country and make a new life with my children. It's about, yeah, life is great and perfect when it is. But when it isn't, what is ours to do? And in doing that, it's still being present and trusting that God does have a hope and a future for you.
You mentioned experiencing PTSD from the experience that these people are having and have had and then are still having from the way they're detained. Is that an accurate statement?
So I have PTSD that I started experiencing in 2017, 2018, and this is the time frame that I was translating all of the testimonies of the families, particularly the mothers, and all of the sexual violence that they have experienced. It's worth it because bearing witness isn't necessarily an easy thing to do. It's certainly not easy for them to flee for their safety. I've had a consequence for my being a portal to bear witness to the injustice that these families have received and continue to receive. I would imagine there's a consequence for many of the volunteers in the borderlands. One of the chapters in the contents, you'll see there's one on risk. There's a risk in bearing witness. There's a risk in choosing to say, I will do what is true and good and right, and I will not be cowed by power. And then there's the gain. The gain is the beautiful spirituality, the absolute love and joy. You can't even begin to experience what it's like when you go to the San Antonio bus station and I just bring some art and simple little things for the kids to do on the floor. And some little girl is tugging on my trousers and asking me if I will just sit down on the floor and play with her. That might seem kind of trivial, but it's that kind of trust and belief and love and hope that is worth the risk. It's worth things being more challenging in your life thereafter, because I have experienced unconditional and abounding love from literally thousands and thousands of mothers and children. And I would say that unconditional, absolutely trust and love. And that's what America is missing when you only see them as an illegal, an alien. You're missing their beauty. They're missing their love. And that's the spirituality of the borders. It's the gain. They have nothing. They're in a detention center or far worse. They're in the camps on the other side of the border during Romania, Mexico. They have nothing. And you'll help them make a bracelet. And what will they do? They'll hand it to you and say, thank you for coming. Thank you for being here. And the one little thing they have, they give back to you. The generosity of spirit, the generosity of love, the generosity of being. That's why I wrote this book, Precious Precarity, A Spirituality of Borders. It's what we miss as a nation. We do not trust that they come here with nothing but the desire to help their families to have life. When you understand that, when anyone begins to understand that, they open their hearts and they begin to look for ways that they can be welcome. I live now surrounded by farmlands in the central coast of California. They're just trying to pay for food, clothing, shelter, and they're working long, hard hours. They're in the fields right across the freeway from my house. From sunrise to sunset, there's someone working somewhere 7 days a week. They're not here to harm us. And they're feeding not only this nation, but the food is exported all around the world. They're not here to hurt us. If there's anything I can say, they're not here to hurt us.
I want to ask more about that, but for just a moment, can I go back and ask about the home you grew up in? What taught you about God, or what prepared you to feel and think the way you do feel and think? Was it the home you grew up in, or was it something along your spiritual journey as you matured?
My transformation to being as passionate as I am about justice, it came through my preparation on ministry when I was attending Austin Presbyterian Theological Seminary in preparation to become an ordained Presbyterian minister. There's all kinds of hoops you have to jump through, and one of them is to do a supervised practice of ministry, which I did at a huge church that had tons and tons of local and global outreach mission, which was awesome. But then the supervising committee over me thought that wasn't good enough, and so they had me do a second supervised practice of ministry, which was at a small church on the west side of San Antonio, which is the poor immigrant side of San Antonio. And the white pastor there said to me, I fell in love with Jesus first, and then I fell in love with the poor and marginalized. And it was my experience in that church, which was invaluable, but then also in the academic preparation for ministry, I did my Old Testament exegesis on Deuteronomy chapter 16, verses 18 to 20. And in particular, verse 20 in Hebrew, it is Zedek, Zedek, justice, only justice, you shall pursue. I spent a semester doing research on justice, only justice, from Deuteronomy 16:20. And then, of course, I've always been shaped and informed by the prophet Zechariah in the Hebrew Bible, chapter 10, verse 10, where you are to welcome the widow, the orphan, the foreigner, and the poor, the fourfold people that God has always said, thou shalt welcome these. So that informed and shaped my spirituality for compassion. Many of the people who came to the church were on the margins and had felt unwelcome at other churches for whatever aspect about them. They were divorced and the church didn't like divorced people. They were LGBTQ and their church didn't like that. So our whole church community was formed around unconditional welcome. And that's been what I have taught on, what I have preached on. It's who I am. I will ensure that the person in the corner is always welcome and comes to the center.
Reverend Helen, because you've worked with so many different people, because you've worked in both planting churches and other ministries, and you supply preaching, how is it that people fall in love with Jesus but don't always fall in love, to quote your mentor there, with the poor and the marginalized?
If you're preaching from the Bible, you know that God cares for the marginalized and oppressed. And I'll flip back to an earlier book, which is Willful Ignorance, Overcoming the Limitations of Christian Love for Refugees Seeking Asylum. And this book, it was my fifth book, and I interviewed my clergy colleagues on why they do or do not preach, teach, lead, help, be present with the thousands of displaced migrant families coming through the borderlands. And this book documents the excuses. And when the clergy are giving the excuses, they're not preaching, they're not teaching, they're not leading. And one simply said, I would be fired.
Wow.
Another one said, I feel like I'm watching the trains go by, as in the trains to Auschwitz, but still won't preach or teach on it. And so when you are more concerned about keeping your job and more concerned about what your current congregation and your parishioners and your deep pockets want over against the call of God and the justice that is clearly a part of the Hebrew Bible and also clearly a part of the Christian Bible, it's something that can't be. Now, I would say when I come in as a guest preacher, you can say things that the house preacher can't. And I do.
You're listening to In Good Faith. More with Reverend Dr. Helen Boursier in just a moment. Did you know In Good Faith has an archive of over 300 episodes featuring people from all faith traditions? Muslims, Catholics, Jews, Hindus, Zoroastrians, Seventh-day Adventists, and many more. All talking to me about their faith journeys and the experiences that taught them about the divine. And these stories have helped me understand my own beliefs better. You can find the In Good Faith archive on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. So dive in and get to know your neighbor and yourself just a little bit more. Hi, I'm Stephen Capp Perry, host of In Good Faith. Nothing captivates me more than people setting out on an adventure, especially if it's a place I wish I could go to or a subject I wish I knew more about, but I don't live in the right place or I don't have the equipment or the expertise. I'm telling you about a podcast from our BYU Radio family of podcasts, an award-winning podcast called Constant Wonder. With host Marcus Smith, you'll be expanding your horizons on all kinds of discovery. It could be science, it could be art, history, and more. Do you need that feeling of awe and wonder in your life more? I do, and I love it when I see how to experience that by hearing the stories of people who are doing and exploring all of those things that are so interesting to me. Check out the podcast, Constant Wonder. This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with Reverend Dr. Helen Boursier. Your conclusion in this book quotes Ecclesiastes like the other chapters, but it says, even those who live many days should rejoice in them all, yet let them remember that the days of darkness will be many. All that comes is vanity. You give several ideas for how to do life. And one that jumped out to me was experiencing the sacred and living a conscious life. You're talking about awareness there. I wonder if you could talk to me about experiencing the sacred as you mean it here in this book and being, quote, conscious.
Experience the sacred is realizing that we don't own anything. All we have is gift, and we are only here for a very, very short time. And so when we claim it and like it's ours and we grip it and we cling on to it, which is the more common thing to do, instead of realizing that we're just custodians, we're just guardians for this. We have legacy, not through what we keep, but through what we give away. And Martin Heidegger, he talks about the voice of conscience and that the essence of being is to be present with care and concern for those around us. And that is living like we don't get to keep it all, right? We're only a portal. And how can we leave so things are better for those who come behind us? That is an important thing and part of spirituality. The last time that I was inside G.O. Carnes before Immigration, Customs and Enforcement rescinded my security clearance and kicked out an ordained Presbyterian minister and the Roman Catholic sister and the United Church of Christ pastor who all assisted me, right? That last time before I knew I was being kicked out, was taking notes on the 70-mile journey back, and I realized what so much of bearing witness comes down to, and that is the individual person in the United States of America and how we vote. That we vote and reinforce and support the fact that we call all the people of authority to accountability. That we are not just going to sit and take it and be in silence. That we are going to try to do what democracy demands of each citizen. Democracy isn't automatic. It falls to we the people to be we the people. And I think that's an important part of my spirituality. It's about accountability and bearing witness. And it comes down to the individual to say, I have to step up.
I don't want to bring up too much of this to you, but you have described rotten food, poisoned water, despair, suicide, isolation. Can faith overcome? Have you seen faith overcoming?
I visited the camps in Nuevo Laredo and in Matamoros, and appalling conditions and the life-threatening every moment the families' lives were at risk there. And yet still, what hope did they have? They couldn't go back home. Death is at home. So all you can do is look forward. All you can do is face forward and trust that God is present. And that's the spirituality of the families. It's also the spirituality of those who bear witness for the volunteers. They're our neighbors, and there's a church in San Antonio that's two blocks up from the bus station. They opened their church. So they had a staggering number of thousands of families that they hosted in their church. You think of, oh, well, I live far away from the borderlands. Well, look around you. Who's on the margins? Who's on the border? Who's not being cared for in your community? That's our call. There is no religion that says oppress the poor, oppress the marginalized, oppress the different people. There's not one single world religion that says treat other people badly. There just isn't. So it really doesn't matter what our faith or spiritual tradition is. We're all called to be present in goodness and love and compassion. And I would say that when we learn to do that, we become our best selves. That's the spirituality of the borderlands, is the ones coming desperately for their families to have something, to have life, not better life, bare life, and for those around them to feel the love and the warmth. And if we would be willing to receive that, we would have a gift in this nation from the families who desperately need to be here and who are willing to do whatever it takes so their children can have life.
Well, I was asking, how do you live a conscious life? You're talking about waking up to what's actually happening and what you're doing, the work that you do. It does open eyes and make people aware.
Opening eyes is absolutely it. Let me just wind to my close by citing Elie Wiesel in his speech, The Perils of Indifference. It was a speech in the White House when Bill Clinton was in office. And it, quote, "The opposite of love is not hatred, it's indifference." So the opposite of love is not hatred, it's indifference. And I taught nursing students at the College of St. Scholastica in a course called Introduction to Spirituality, and I had them watch this video and then have a conversation about it. And it's one of the most commented, assigned contexts that they had, because you realize that indifference really becomes a poison. It becomes a toxin. And we think, well, it's not my problem. I don't live in the borderlands. I'm not right there. But none of that's true. We all are responsible for poor decisions, for angriness, for meanness, for things that are not going well, not only in the borderlands, but in our own communities. So there's plenty of ways to show up and help. There's plenty of ways to be a grace and mercy, compassion and love.
Well, thank you for inspiring us. Thank you for the work you do and the joy you brought to so many people in those circumstances. Much appreciated.
Well, I hope all are inspired to be present.
Many thanks to Reverend Helen Boursier for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heather Bigley. Our production team also includes Heidi Clough, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designers are Mark Hansen and DJ Cromarty. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. Find us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast and subscribe to our YouTube channel for extended interviews. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon, right here, In Good Faith. You know, there are no perfect people, and there are no perfect families, and no perfect relationships. So how do we be good people and have good relationships and good families? How do we do better at what is most important to us? I'm here to tell you about The Lisa Show, another in the family of BYU Radio podcasts. Lisa Valentine Clark is a comedian, a believer, a single mother. She delves into the challenges and the relationships that shape all of our lives, whether we're talking about parenting, mental health questions, social issues, being a caregiver. She and her council of moms tackle the topic. Yes, you'll hear from experts, but you'll also hear from the people who have been digging the trenches. She'll help you figure out this thing called life with lots of laughs along the way. It's The Lisa Show. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.